In an America divided by race, class, and religion, shifting demographics are making party politics increasingly blurry. The census predicts that by 2044, white Americans will no longer be the majority of citizens, only the largest group. And while no one disagrees with those numbers, it's a lot less clear what those changing demographics mean for how people vote and how politicians try to get that vote. Stephen Phillips is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, and he thinks that shifting demographics are good news for the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. In his new book, Brown is the New White, Phillips argues that demographic shifts are already moving the dial in American politics.
Now there are so many people of color that progressive whites and people of color together comprise a majority, and that's the population that elected and then reelected Obama.
But Linda Martine Alcoff is less certain. She's a professor of philosophy at Hunter College and the City University of New York Graduate Center in New York City.
It's clear from this election that the African-American vote and the Latino vote are not, you know, there's not a consensus around particular candidates or even a particular party.
In her new book, The Future of Whiteness, Alcoff explores an undecided minority vote and a white vote struggling to adapt to today's demographic realities. To start off this conversation about race and politics, I asked Steve Phillips to review the numbers over the last 50 years.
People of color have grown from 12% of the population to 38% of the population. And at the same time, there's always been a fairly consistent white progressive vote within the country. But now there are so many people of color that progressive whites and people of color together comprise a majority. And that's the population that elected and then reelected Obama.
You know, at the same time, Linda Martine Alcoff, that population has not had a major impact on things like Congress. It may have elected and reelected Barack Obama, but we're now left with essential gridlock and no consensus at all.
Well, it's had a major impact on city politics around the country, and there's four states that are now majority-minority, or maybe five. So, you know, it's on the horizon, and by 2042, it's going to be a different ball game. So all the predictions are in motion of how that electorate will vote. It's clear from this election that the African-American vote and the Latino vote are not, you know, there's not a consensus around particular candidates or even a particular party. So everything is in flux. We don't know what the future of the Latino vote will be.
Right. Steve Phillips, Linda Martine Alcoff raises an interesting point because this grand majority of progressives, at least what should be a grand coalition of progressives because of white and brown voters, is undercut by the Bernie Sanders phenomenon, it seems. You see a candidate who's getting tons and tons of progressive votes, and I dare say only a trickle of minority voters in his corner.
Right. Well, that's the reality of what we need to reconceptualize, frankly, how we define what the progressive coalition is. The single most reliable block of Democratic voters has been the African-American community. So you can't actually talk about what is the progressive majority without starting with talking about where is the black community at. That's the population that enabled Obama to win the primary, and that's the cornerstone of Clinton's current population. And so I think it's more accurate to talk about Sanders has a lot of support from progressive whites, but I wouldn't label that the entire progressive population. And then just one other point, too, is in terms of the congressional results and how it has not played itself out. It's not that the coalition elected Obama did not elect people to Congress. It's that the coalition elected Obama did not come out to vote in the off-year elections. And that's how the congressional chambers were lost in 2010 and 2014.
Now, let's talk about the Republican race, because it was after 2012 when Mitt Romney lost Latinos by 38 points that the Republicans did an autopsy. We need to reorient our party. If we don't appeal to minorities, we'll never appeal to a wide swath of the American voter. We can't be the party of Southern whites. And yet we're seeing an election season, Linda Martine Alcoff, where that has not happened at all. These demographic changes are the very fuel behind a lot of the anti-immigrant and protectionist politics of the campaign.
Yes. I mean, I really see this election as a contestation for the hearts and minds of the white poor and the white working class, who are still the major chunk of the electorate. Both Sanders and Trump are appealing in very overt ways. I mean, Trump has dropped the dog whistle, right? He's just whistling, articulating the interests of white workers as in absolute opposition to immigrants and to people of color around the world. And Sanders is offering also another account that responds to the real economic needs of this white constituency that has not reached the upper middle class, you know, heights.
Well, let's listen to this exchange recently on CNN between African-American commentator Van Jones and Donald Trump supporter Jeffrey Lord, because it speaks exactly, I think, to what we're talking about.
Tell Donald Trump he needs, for my children's sake, for the children's sake of America, if he's going to leave this country, he needs to be as passionate about what has happened
we have to
people
be passionate.
In my community as anybody else.
We have to be passionate about making sure that, as Robert Kennedy used to say, that this country is colorblind.
Steve Phillips, do you see a brand of white identity politics in the Trump campaign?
Oh, absolutely. And so this notion around colorblindness fails to appreciate that the country is not colorblind. When you have studies showing that people are called back for interviews based upon whether their name sounds white or not, the contemporary racial discrepancies in our society are tied to active amounts of preference for whites. And so this notion of colorblindness is a fallacy and a mask to what's actually happening in the country. And then Trump is very much appealing to, if you think about it, this notion of make America great again. When was America great in their minds? And was this before the 1964 Civil Rights Act that ended discrimination within the country and before the Voting Rights Act of 65, which finally made it illegal to ban people of color from voting on a legal basis? And so he's hearkening back to an era when the country was much whiter and people of color were much more marginal and less influential on the culture and the politics of our country.
Linda Martin-Alcott.
Well, you know, I think the hysteria of the white reaction that we've been seeing since Obama's election, clearly in 2008, the rise of gun sales, the rise of white nationalist groups and nativism that is now fueling Trump's campaign, is really critical to address. And my worry about focusing only on the progressive whites and not offering a response or a counter narrative or a counter agenda to the Republican whites is that this white hysteria and reaction will increase. They will be more armed. I mean, after the demographic changes, whites will still be the largest plurality. So it's going to be a sizable population, and I think the future depends on whether or not there is an appeal made and a growing social movement and constituency that can address and provide an alternative to the racist, hysterical reaction about the demographic change, but that is addressed to whites directly.
Linda Martin-Alcoff is author of The Future of Whiteness and a professor of philosophy at Hunter College and the City University of New York Graduate Center here in New York City. And Steve Phillips, his book is Brown is the New White, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Thank you both so much.
Glad to be here.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.